I didn't. I had to make a stop, though, and I got a little delayed. But, yeah. Well, listen, I appreciate...
Okay, excuse me. Do we have the tape started?
Yes.
Okay. We're taking the videotape.
Yeah, I know. That's great.
And I just want to make clear that this recording is copyright 1992, Autodesk Incorporated, all rights reserved. All participants in this on-record interview acknowledge that it is being recorded and that this recording or any derivative therefrom, including but not limited to transcripts, quotations, or edited extracts, may be used in any manner by Autodesk Incorporated. No participant in this interview is a public figure.
Okay, that's fine. I'll just remind you that this is a newspaper interview and that we'll just treat it as such, okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, listen, I appreciate the chance to come by to talk with you, because Autodesk is a very interesting company, and I don't know, for reasons that probably have to do with the fact that there are just so many things we can get to. We haven't really paid a lot of attention in the couple of years that I've been covering software. I also cover personal computers, but I've had a chance to do some little bit of boning up on the company, and you know, I'm real grateful that I had a chance to come by and talk, because there really is no substitute for talking to senior management when it comes to assessing how a company's doing or what it's up to. So I hope that, now I don't know what kind of time frame you had, but I hope we can get through a lot of things, and I hope also you appreciate that you know a lot more about the company than I do, and I will benefit by whatever time you can share with me, because I have a lot of there's a lot of things I'm trying to come to grips with, and in a lot of ways you're the best people to help me.
And
I mean that. Okay. All right. Great. Is there anything you guys wanted to mention in kicking it off, or no? Because otherwise I can just explain that in a lot of ways this is sort of straightforward. We're interested in profiling the company, partly because it's at a crossroads, partly because it's there's some interesting issues around the personalities and the.
I thought we weren't here to discuss personalities.
Yeah, right. We're not going to discuss personalities. Yeah, but the personality and people run this company. Right.
People run every company.
Yeah. Right. And so when you write about companies, you can't avoid writing about people. And so there are some interesting folks here. And the technology that you guys have always had a strong reputation for technical excellence. And the software business in particular, I think that, even the investment community is aware that's very important. And so maybe we'll be able to talk a little bit about that, too. I'm interested in talking to you all, and I hope that for some of you, if there are some questions that I can't pose to you within the time that we have, or I just happen to forget to ask them, which is my main nemesis in these interviews, is forgetting things. That we can, maybe I can get back to you. I mean, Al, I've talked to you on the phone a couple of times, but in particular, John, because this is my first opportunity to talk with you, I was going to direct some initial questions to you. So I hope that's okay. So basically, I wanted to talk about some of the management. Some of the issues about the company that you've raised, and I actually wanted to get to some of them specifically, because a little bit down the road, because I think we can get at some of these questions of the company's future and the strategies being put into place, and likewise. But I want to open with a few general questions about how why you chose to express your misgivings about Autodesk management in this sort of semi-public fashion, and what you felt the ramifications would be from that. I know there's a passing reference in the letter the letter that you were aware that you had thought about the consequences of distributing it, but why didn't you just sort of sit down with people face to face and?
Well, excuse me. First, I disagree with your characterization of Information Letter 14 as speaking of misgivings. You write Information Letter 14.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, let's rephrase it to just say an expression of your thoughts. Why didn't you choose to express your thoughts to management in private, face-to-face?
I have on numerous occasions, as I continue to.
Okay.
Information Letter 14 is, you will note the number 14 appears in it.
Right. And I know there's 13 others, but
no, there's another 12 others.
12 others, that's fine. The question I've got, though, is that, you in distributing something like this to a wider audience, you naturally, as you yourself mentioned, copies were going to get out to people outside the family. Well, I'm trying to get you to stay on that question, though, rather than dissect the question.
You asked me a question in which you began by asking your misgivings about the management of Autodesk.
Mm-hmm.
Information Letter 14 was not about misgivings about the management of Autodesk. I explicitly stated in the beginning that I had no desire whatsoever either to replace the current management of Autodesk or to take a role in it myself. You'll find that, I forget on what page, but it's right at the beginning.
Okay.
Information Letter 14 is not about misgivings about the management of Autodesk.
Mm-hmm.
It is not about misgivings about Autodesk so much as it's about, like the 12 information letters that preceded it, the state of the industry, what companies must do to compete in it, and it is entirely in keeping with the information letter I wrote 10 years ago in which this company was organized.
Okay. Did
the
you
industry
think
is changing.
Okay.
Companies must adapt, and it was necessary to allow everybody in the company, not just two or three people at the top, but every manager within the company and most employees within the company to understand that the competitive environment in which our company competes is shifting.
Okay.
You can't shift the mindset of an entire company by talking to a group of five managers.
Do you undermine senior management by distributing a paper like this?
No.
You don't?
All of the senior management who was in charge then is in charge now. We reorganized a little bit. But
Al Green is outgoing. I mean, one could say ad hoc that senior management was undermined. I mean, in the sense that
you could say that. That is not true.
Well, all right. Again, the question really is, whatever your intentions, I mean, wasn't it inevitable that if you distribute pretty harsh criticisms of senior management like that it's going to undermine them. It's going to make it difficult for them
to
function.
Does not contain what I consider to be harsh criticisms of management.
Okay.
It contains specific questions about Autodesk's strategy, a strategy which was largely coherent and consistent with the time that I was managing the company. Information Letter 14 is a letter about the fact that the company's strategy must change, that the strategy that worked when I was president in 83 and 84 and 85 and when Al was president in the subsequent years is not the best strategy for Autodesk entering the 1990s.
Okay. I mean, while you didn't personally single out individual managers, I mean, you did say on page 30, I was so appalled by what I heard at one management meeting that I vowed never to attend another management meeting, and I never have. I mean, that's taking somebody to the woodshed by any measure. If you're so frustrated by what disturbed me so much about this incident was the way management seemed to be taking their marching orders from the accounting rules rather than the real world.
Yes, well, excuse me.
That's a criticism.
That's
expressing misgivings about management.
That is a criticism of how United States public companies are run. Autodesk is a United States public company. I think you will find amongst the companies you talk to very few which have the courage to go out and report disappointing short-term results to make the investments that are necessary to adapt to a changing market. Autodesk had that problem. Autodesk does not have that problem anymore. Information Letter 14 was the only way that I knew of to cause Autodesk to adopt a long-term survival strategy for this company. We can continue to run margins of 50% or 60% for 1 year or 2 years, but we intend to be in business for the next 10, 20, 30, 50 years. And it was necessary to put the issue squarely in front of everybody. You can't go out and say, we have a secret plan for the evolution of the market. You can't go to the shareholders with that. You have to say the market has changed, the competitive environment has changed, the opportunities are unbounded, and as the management of this company, we are going to make the investments that are necessary to exploit that opportunity.
Okay. Frankly, I admire a lot of the candor and you have with regards to the climate in which companies operate under, particularly with the public equity markets and the pressure that brings. Okay, but Mr. Green, what's your professional training?
My background is finance.
Are you an accountant?
No, I'm not.
No. Okay, you've got an MBA in finance,
something like that.
Yeah, because one of the things, one of my questions was if you preside over the installation of a CEO and chairman whose background is in finance, is in, whose skills are in manipulating financial assets, would it surprise you? Would it surprise you that you get a company that starts acting like
Al Green is the best manager I've ever met, and I endorse his installation, as you choose to term it,
right,
as president of Autodesk, because right, I had never met anybody in my life before Al Green who I thought could run this company during a period of rapid growth. It was all I could do to run this company from zero to $50 million a year. Al Green ran this company from $50 million a year to more than a quarter of a billion. He continues to run the company.
By most
his
measures,
record of success is quite adequate as far as I'm concerned, and much better than I was expecting, I must say, at the point that he took the company over.
Yeah.
The company has continued to... and I think that when I talk about taking their marching rules from accountants, I'm not talking about Al Green. I'm talking about the analysts on Wall Street. I'm talking about people that are looking at him.
But you say the way management, and you're clearly referring to Autodesk management, seem to be taking their marching orders from the accounting rules rather than the real world. I don't want to get hung up on whether or not you were criticizing your own management.
I don't understand why that's an important issue to you, whether I was criticizing management or not. I was criticizing
the issue,
strategy.
Because the important issue to me, you're right, that wasn't. But the important issue is, does public criticism like that undermine your management's ability to lead? And you said that there was no other way to get these issues on the table for people to grapple with. And that may be. You lived through it. I didn't. So, I'm not dismissing that. I'm just saying that what happened before you reached that point in terms of the discussions you presumably did have that you grew frustrated, you felt weren't being productive. What happened during that period of time? Why couldn't you get your message across? Because you're obviously an articulate, forceful speaker. Why couldn't they understand what you were saying?
Because I believe, and I don't think it's appropriate or useful to discuss this meeting or that meeting or who said what when a year, 18 months, 24 months ago. I believe that the reason that Autodesk did not change its strategies prior to Information Letter 14 was that the entire environment, the entire change in the market that was presented in Information Letter 14 had never really been laid out before. I think you'll find other people in the industry that consider it to be an expressive...
But you could have laid it out privately to these folks.
I could have, but then they would have had to have taken it to everybody else in the company anyway. Because this is a company that is not run from the top. It's a company in which innovation comes from the bottom. And if individuals in all of our business units are not aware that the expectations of the users and the customers, the opportunity in our market, if they're not aware of that, then they're not going to understand orders that are given to them from the executive office.
Okay.
This is a creativity business. And in a creativity business, the people that are doing the creating have to understand the environment they're in. We've been a very, very successful company for a long time. And when you've been very successful with one formula, it's very difficult to change it. It's very difficult to understand that the world is changing. If you look at the companies in 1982 that did not make the transition from the 8-bit machines to the IBM PC, you see companies that were making so much money, doing so well with their old strategy, and the message was undoubtedly, and I think if you look at the history of those companies, in many cases, the executive suite knew what they had to do, but they just couldn't get the people that were doing the work to change their mindset. That's what we had to do.
Okay.
And in terms of what memo went to what person at what time, the important thing to focus on is that Autodesk has, since April of last year, changed its strategy, has implemented virtually every, not a question of implementing recommendations, but is addressing these things and is moving into the future.
Okay.
With a strategy that is consistent
right.
with what is needed to survive in this new environment.
I want to cover that because there's a lot of things that in specific I want to cover on that. You're some way through this 90-day period in which you'll be back here. Is that?
That's right.
What day are we on now? Do you know?
I don't actually count the days. I arrived in mid-January.
In mid-January. So presumably you'll stay till mid-March, or is it a little open-ended?
That would be mid-April.
Mid-April.
Mid-January.
I'm sorry. Mid-April. Would you be staying? Is it open-ended, or is that sort of firm?
It's firm to the extent that I expect to be able to take care of everything I came over here to do during that period of time.
Okay.
I'm quite confident of that, and I think we're on track.
There are a number of companies in the software industry, some of which you admire, namely Borland and Microsoft, which have as their chief executives people who you might say are cut from the same cloth as yourself, technical people who have a keen grasp of management and business issues. It served both Microsoft and Borland very well for the chief executives of those companies to be founders who still roll up their sleeves with programmers at their company. Why not you? What you would seem to be the ideal candidate.
I disagree with your statement. You said you seem to be cut from the same cloth.
Uh-huh.
Every human being is different from every other human being. I don't believe there's really much similarity between Bill Gates and Philippe Kahn, except that they both run highly successful software companies. I don't think there's much similarity between either of those two and myself. I think it's very convenient to put people in a box saying, this person's standard entrepreneur issue 1B, run software company. I'm an engineer, I'm a programmer, I'm a technologist. I have no interest in running a large U.S. public company, and I never have. It was a means to the end to be able to accomplish the technological work that I wish to achieve.
The sad fact is that if you look at the successful software companies and you look at the unsuccessful ones, the Ashton Tates and the Lotuses, they don't have that person there.
The
Borlands and the Microsofts, the Symantecs, they do.
I disagree with you. The largest software company in the world is IBM. It isn't run by a software guy.
Would you be happy with their record?
Would 15% compounded growth for a century? Yes, sir. I'd be happy with that record.
All right. Their record in software.
Excuse me. I did not say that. I spoke of their growth record.
Okay.
This is an industrial
All I'm saying is that, you know, in terms of the class of PC...
But
you know what I was talking about. I was talking about PC software companies. I was not talking about mainframe computer companies. Within the class of PC software companies of which AutoCAD clearly is a member, there are certain features.
Sir, it is not a member of the PC software company. This is a very different business. You're likening us to companies that sell mass market products at retail in a competitive environment through mail order. We are an engineering software company whose mm-hmm. product is bought by professionals who pay 10 times as much money for our product as they pay for the products of the companies you've named. And the model of our business, it is simply wrong to liken our business to Microsoft or Borland.
Okay.
We are like the Neil Schwindler Corporation, like Swanson.
And what kind of CEOs do they have?
Like PDA.
What kind of CEOs do those companies
have? They have experienced business managers who understand the operation of a company in a long-term evolving market.
And is that your ideal for a CEO for Autodesk?
I don't have an ideal for a CEO for Autodesk. Autodesk doesn't... I think you are... Again, making a statement that I believe to be unfounded in fact. I don't believe companies are run by Superman CEOs. I think the companies that are run by Superman CEOs live only as long as the Superman happens to do the job well and die with his first mistake. I think that successful companies are run by teams of people, which include individual strong players who understand every aspect of the business. The CEO is the head of that team, but whether that CEO has a technical background, has a marketing and a salesperson and a finance person and a legal person on that team, or vice versa, does not matter.
Is the team in place here at Autodesk, or do you think it needs to be augmented, and in what way does it need to be?
I believe we have an excellent team in place at Autodesk, and I think our record is indicative of that.
So, I mean, my understanding is that is will Volker be staying on as the CEO, or is he an interim person, and if so...
No, Volker is on an interim assignment as chief operating officer, mm-hmm. not chief executive
okay.
officer.
So what in terms of Alvar's replacement, then, what is your thinking about that?
That's
you
it.
Need someone that just will fit in with
no,
a strong team that you
I
have already.
I don't need. I'm not on the CEO search committee. That's a board matter. And the board, it is the board which is charged by the investors.
You're on the board now, right?
No, I'm not on the board.
You're on the board anymore. Okay.
I haven't been since 1988.
All right. And what I'd say is, can you imagine professional managers of the stature that you'd want to be CEO that would join this company knowing that you have a looming presence and a huge sway over the course of the company? Could they see it in themselves to see that as an asset and as opposed to something to basically be afraid of?
If they believe that, then I don't believe they should or would take the job, because if they believe that, they believe something that isn't true. I don't have a looming presence over this company. I have an influence, perhaps, as a founder of the company, as somebody who's been involved in product development, both in AutoCAD and new products. But I believe you'll find, if you talk to people, that between the time I resigned as chairman in 1988 and the time I wrote information letter 14, I was not looming around behind the company. I was sitting at home developing new products. And that's what I intend to go back to doing in Switzerland just as soon as I can.
Okay. Was there anything particular that sparked, moved you to write this information letter 14? Letter itself, you talk about how you don't want to be seen as a stalking horse, but that there were folks within the company who you respected and who had made big contributions to the company who had conveyed their concerns to you. Was that part of the reason that prompted you, or were the things you noticed yourself? Or
no, I act in what I believe to be the best interest of a company I own more than 850,000 shares of stock in. I wrote information letter 14 because I felt it was necessary and the most effective way to protect and cause my investment to grow further.
I just meant that in terms of why you did it then. Was there any precipitating factors, or was it just a whole bunch of things, too many to number for me or to lay out for me?
No, there wasn't any precipitating event other than I finished my previous project and decided to spend some time.
You had some free time to look at the questions.
Well, if you'd like me to answer your question, I'll be glad to. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to make a speech, go ahead. I had been working on the 286 version of AutoCAD, mm-hmm. and I had turned that over to the AutoCAD development group at the end of 1990, mm-hmm. and then decided to take some time to go out and look at the industry, buy some Windows software, learn about a little bit more about the contemporary channels, look at the competition, and survey the competitive environment. Information letter 14 was the result of that process.
Okay. Had you used Windows before then, or had you been familiar with it?
I used Windows back to 1985.
Why does it come? I have to say that I, with respect, certainly to Windows, I have to say I agree with you wholeheartedly. It seems like the company was late in recognizing the importance of Windows, and has been late to market with it.
No, I disagree with that.
Okay.
I don't think we were. We had a Windows project underway for both our AutoSketch and AutoCAD before Information Letter 14 was written. It's a major job, particularly. Well, in fact, we were one of the first to market on OS2 with any product. And our Windows product essentially inherited all the work we've done on the OS2 product. It's not an easy job to put a product the size of AutoCAD under the existing 16-bit Windows. Mm-hmm. It's a major commitment of people for us, but I don't consider it as late to market.
Okay. In the letter, you exhorted the company to move more quickly in the Windows area.
that was one of many recommendations, but I was actually quite happy with our progress with the Windows AutoCAD, except perhaps in terms of relative priorities versus some other platforms. I think,
but that's the whole game.
Relative priorities is
a lot of the game. I mean, you know, that seemed to be what you were complaining about, was prioritizing and putting
a different letter than the one I wrote. No, I was focusing on the marketing opportunities that we had. I felt that this was a product which, when done, should not simply be made available, but rather aggressively marketed, because we had a substantial opportunity to broaden the market. This is also not a one-product company. We sold more than 500,000 copies of AutoCAD, in fact, more than 600,000. We've also sold 500,000 copies of low-cost CAD, both AutoSketch and generic CAD, and those are products that are in the retail channel. Those are products which it was important for us to get on Windows as soon as possible and to increase our focus on Windows in the retail world.
So you were happy with the way that worked out in terms of...
I'm very happy with our position.
Okay, good. This one point that I'd ask for, you said, I've decided to take all the heat personally for putting these issues on the agenda. I'm not a stalking horse for anybody, and I don't want to suffer. I don't want anybody to suffer just because I happen to agree with them. Did you end up taking any heat for putting this stuff on the agenda, or
not really?
Not really. What was the reaction of folks to the letter?
I think it was kind of like when you fire a shotgun in an aviary. There was silence for
in an aviary. Avery, okay.
You know where they have birds. There was a kind of a period of silence, and then a few little twitters began, and then a large amount of conversation. It had really the effect I intended it to have. It caused everybody to say, what is our strategy? What are we doing? What are the opportunities out there? What are the foregone opportunities that simply staying on our existing strategy may create? And that's really the point. I mean, how can I possibly impugn the performance of the management of Autodesk when Autodesk has just finished the most successful year in its entire history? We have highest sales, highest profits, largest number of new products, greatest market share, broadest international distribution, more employees, more technology in the lab, more products scheduled for introduction next year than ever. Okay, that's not a record of failure. The fact that our earnings were lower in the fourth quarter than some people on Wall Street expected, because we sell to the two most cyclical industries in the world, construction and building, and we're in the middle of a depression, is not anything that has to do with Autodesk strategy. We began this year with about a 70% market share in the CAD business. We ended the year with a 71% market share in the CAD business, 71.4, I believe it is. That's not a company that's being clobbered by competition.
No.
That's not a Lotus being clobbered by itself. That's a company that needs to build on the base that we have and expand that base with additional products, with additional platforms such as Windows, to broaden to the point that we are a broadly diversified company. That has been our goal since the foundation of the company. We have been in the multimedia market for several years. We're in the retail market. We're increasing all of those with that focus as time goes on.
I sense from reading the letter that you feel the company should be in the class of a Microsoft or a Borland over the long run. That you talk about, you know, the industrial empires that are kind of being created by these software companies, and in terms of a record compared to most industries, Autodesk's record is stunning, but the growth rate has lagged that of the Novell, Borland, and Microsoft would be kind of the triumvirate of
well, Novell's real, kind of a hardware company, so.
real big ones. Well, you can tell them that. Explain that to Ray. I think he'll be interested to hear what you have to say on that. But
look at their revenue.
I'm asking is that do you feel that Autodesk ought to be in that class so that your standard of measuring them, of measuring Autodesk, is that much higher? It's not just, are you outgrowing the U.S. industry? It's, are we keeping up with Borland and Microsoft and
I don't think we're keeping up with Borland and Microsoft. I believe that Autodesk, I own no equities other than Autodesk, basically. The reason for that is that I do not believe there's any other company I could invest in which is better positioned to be one of the largest industrial companies in the 21st century.
My question was about whether or not you feel any sense of frustration that you haven't kept up in growth rate with these companies, whose growth rate has been, you know, higher than yours.
You use you both to mean me and the company.
No, you.
Which do you mean?
You.
No, I don't have a growth rate. I'm an investor.
No, I'm saying, well, are you frustrated that Autodesk's growth rate has not been as high as these companies I've mentioned?
No.
And is that, do you feel that you know, it ought to be in that class?
I believe that Autodesk, I don't use the word ought, I believe that it will be in that class. And
okay.
I believe it will be in that class when we expand. When two things happen, when we expand the base we've built and when the investments we've already made come to market. The fact that, for example, this year about 90% of our revenue is Autodesk.
Is that up, down, over the... Is that about the same as it's always been? Or?
About the same,
I believe, yeah. I mean, over the long term it's down because it used to be 100%, but
yeah.
You're on
but over the last few years, it's about the same.
We expect that to be substantially less next year, perhaps at least to the, say, 87, 85 level. Mm-hmm. When you invest in something like multimedia, for example, we've invested in multimedia. We have, very large, perhaps commanding market share in the professional video production market. That's not a very large market, but that's a base that you can grow from. Mm-hmm. Whoever owns that tools market is in the best position when the consumer explosion occurs in multimedia. We are not interested, and I don't believe we should be interested, speaking as an investor, in going head-to-head, battling it out in the C compiler wars or the spreadsheet wars, the word processing wars. For everybody that enters that battle, only one tends to win, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of losers along the way.
Yeah.
Our strategy is very different. Find a market that's not mature yet, that's not developed yet, in which a relatively small investment can gain us a large market share, and a market which has the speed of computers, has the graphics performance, the storage capacity, mm-hmm. inevitably increases, will become more and more viable and expand into a consumer market. That is precisely what we did with AutoCAD. AutoCAD, if you've been interviewing me, as nobody did in 1983, talking about the failure of Autodesk in 1983, we were just bumping along with a very slow growth rate and would have continued to bump along forever until the PC8P came out. The PC8P, the 286 machines, made Autodesk because it gave us a platform that had the power we needed. In multimedia, it takes something like the introduction of the MPC. In scientific modeling, which we're entering in a month with the first desktop molecular modeler, it will take the 50 megahertz 486 or 586 machine to really make that. But if you get there first, if you own the market share in the market, if you own the market share in the market when nobody takes it seriously because it's so small, then you have the beachhead that you need to expand beyond that without making vast $100 million bets and mm-hmm. taking away market share from Portland or Microsoft. That's right. Our strategy. We control today everything in this room other than people is manufactured. Every single thing is manufactured. The central part of manufacturing in the world today is drafting. And we have an overwhelming market share in that process. That gives us the base at the center of the design process. We can move earlier in the design process, conceptual design, product presentation, rendering, on the tail end of the design process, into testing, manufacturing, from that base. But we are in the drafting shop, and today that is the point that every design test is through. If you look at those other markets in manufacturing, in architecture, in geographical information systems, they're easy to distinct. That's a niche market. Yeah, that one's a $250 million niche market. That one's a $500 million niche market. Control of the center of that process, control of the design database is what AutoCAD gives us today. We can drop product after product after product into that market. We already have. We have our solid modeler. We've sold more than 60,000. Last week we shipped a major update to it. We have the contractual arrangements with ERSI, who is the number one player in geographical information systems. Mm-hmm. We're cooperating with SDRC, one of the leading players in mechanical design. And we are, through these arrangements, putting products through our channel into our customer location. that provides the solution that the designers and engineers look
Let me ask you in that regard, because again, from reading about Autodesk and some of the initiatives you have in different areas are quite intriguing. But I'm kind of struck by a tension between being you're still largely a one-product company in terms of the revenue stream you have currently. And a lot of the things you're talking about are basically leveraging off of your core strength in design software. And how would you describe to me where is it? Are you the design software company, or are you a software company that just happened to have hit this mother lode in this one design area? But you really are a general diversified company that you plan on having. Hopefully, you plan on hitting something big in some area that may not be related to design. Or is design pretty much the thing that knits it all together for you? And anybody can jump in and answer that one, all right?
I don't know which of the eight questions you asked you'd like me to answer first, but I think when you characterize us as a one-product company, we're an unusual one-product company in that most of the other one-product companies you'd name have not had the retail price of their product rise from $1,000 to nearly $4,000 over the last 10 years. That rise has been the consequence of additional capabilities being put in that one product, which
I'd like to talk about pricing separately, but this question of where you're heading, is it to be a design software company or to be,
to be the leader in design software, and we intend to be a significant player in other industries, including multimedia, including scientific modeling, including information systems.
Okay.
And if you look at our business unit organization, each of those business units is chartered as being one of the top players in that area.
Okay. Let's talk about that, not in great detail, but briefly. In the information systems area, are you referring to the online
Xanadu and Amex?
Amex, right. And the multimedia, you've got products in that, and you've got more coming.
We have three products already launched and more coming.
Okay. And the scientific modeling, you've got this product next month?
Yeah, next month, yes.
Is that the first product in that area?
That is
area?
The first product in that
okay.
area. Yes.
Okay.
And then our retail products division.
Yeah, Chaos already, right? Yeah.
And, of course, that's kind of on the edge, because right. We have a retail products division in Bothell, Washington, that sells GenericCAD, the Home Series, AutoSketch, and also distributes the scientific products Chaos and CA Lab. They will be doing additional retail products in various areas, not necessarily limited to CAD in the future.
Let me ask you about information and multimedia. Again, just briefly, because these are big subjects. We could spend the whole afternoon just on them, but I did want to throw out some reactions I had and just some ideas. The parent company, the Wall Street Journal, is in the electronic information business, Dow Jones News Retrieval. I don't know if you ever, presumably you've used it. What can you bring to that kind of business that the current players who, are really, leveraging all that information that they've got, proprietary information, or maybe they've brokered it. In the case of Dow Jones, they have a they broker information for that other people, other newspapers and publications. Is there something unique you can bring, or what's the formula there you're working with?
The most powerful thing in the world, a new idea. If you're talking about Amex, which is the online service component of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Amex is to Dow Jones News Retrieval or CompuServe as financial futures are to a bank. When they opened, I think in your own newspaper, nobody took financial futures seriously until they established a strong beachhead. You could say, there's forward contracts at banks, they've been around for 50 years, and yet suddenly, not only did an entire multi-billion market, billion-dollar market appear out of nowhere, it now uses up a large part of the back end of your paper. What we're doing is creating the first information market, and that's something that's very fundamentally different from selling the kind of online services?
Yeah, I don't actually. I mean, and maybe because I can't grasp it, but I don't see that distinction. I mean, it seems to me that you're distributing information. You can, marketplace sounds like a nice marketing idea, but it's fundamentally the same kind of business
as
Dow Jones News Retriever would be.
No, sir, I would recommend you read their brochure in the background.
Well, give it to me in a nutshell. What am I missing that I haven't grasped at them? What am I missing?
Your statement is wrong. We're not we're not distributing information in any fashion. We are providing a place where information buyers and information sellers can do transactions, and we make our money on the transactions. Mm-hmm. We are not setting prices. We are not deriving contracts. We're providing a market.
And so you're something like an auctioneer of information, or
we're like nothing you've ever seen. And if you look at, for example, today, the market for market research in PC Trends, in financial research, the entire market for financial market newsletters, the market for consulting, in any one of these fields is an extremely inefficient market. It costs the consultant spends half his life marketing himself. If we can allow him to market himself and market his product at a cost which is a small fraction, we believe we will create an efficient market in expertise.
Okay, so it's geared towards not publications then, or published information, but sort of the information locked up in people's minds that maybe consultants or advisors, is that?
Both. But the unique thing, published information in the sense of products. We can distribute software for $5 and have both the seller and buyer and us make money on it. That's a channel that doesn't exist today.
Okay, electronically.
Electronically.
Yeah. Okay, all right. So, but I should think of it more in terms of the expertise of these consultants or software rather than another vehicle to get people to buy a magazine, essentially, the contents of a magazine.
That is one unique aspect of it. I don't know of any, on Dow Jones News Retrieval, for example, you cannot, as you can today with Annex, if you open an account, request consulting from Mitch Kapoor. He was our second customer. Mitch is on the system. He will do consulting for you. You may not be able to pay his price. As additional people with expertise come on that system, we will be providing a vehicle for anybody who can pay the price to call on the expertise of industry-leading figures, as well as buy their existing
and so it creates efficiencies for them in terms of finding customers.
They don't have to spend all their time making cold calls marketing their expertise.
Okay.
Precisely.
Let's talk about multimedia a little bit, although how important do you think content is to the whole equation of this? And again, anybody can jump in on this one. I mean, you've got Bill Gates thinks content's important enough so that he's trying to buy the rights to electronic art. I mean, from my talks with Apple, they seem to think content's important in the sense that, I don't know if you're familiar with a company called ETAC, geographic, geocoded information. You might just want to buy it all, the information, the geocoding, and just slap it right in whatever device you've got there. Or you could be in the software tools business. You could be the kind of Adobe of multimedia and make something that just isn't needed in the process. But I happen to think myself, and this again may be premature to come to this conclusion, but the personal productivity business for this multimedia is, I think, going to be one of the smallest parts of it. And just wondering, do you see the content part of it as important?
I'm not trying to find the personal productivity part.
Well, forget I said that. All right, let's just do you see content as important to the equation in multimedia, or is it? Can you pursue it in pure software as a pure software opportunity?
Content is software.
Well, what I mean by software is computer programs, and what I mean by content is stuff that most people thought of as artifacts, films, books, pictures. You get the idea, okay? So that's what I mean. I don't mean software in the sense that Sony talks about it, okay?
Well, I believe that there is, as multimedia plays out, there will be plenty of money to be made in every sector of the business. I think if you look at Sony's business, for example.
But I asked you if you needed content, okay? Oh. Do you need content?
For multimedia to become a large retail consumer business, mm-hmm. content is necessary.
How do you go about getting it?
That's not necessarily the sector that we will choose to address.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm asking. So you're not going to address the content.
I did not say that. You're putting words in my mouth again. You'd like me to answer your question. You asked me, do you believe content is important? Content is very important, but the people that make VCRs do not necessarily also make the tapes.
Okay. So let's move from that. Since you've agreed that content is important, do you think it's important for Autodesk to be in the content business?
Perhaps. Our director of that business unit isn't here. I really shouldn't put words in his mouth. Mm-hmm. But I believe that Autodesk can make plenty of money purely selling tools. I believe we can probably make more money selling content. But many of these so-called content businesses tend to be very low-margin publishing-type businesses rather than high-margin software businesses. Mm-hmm. And you have to analyze it from a business standpoint. If the dynamics of your business end up looking more like a record company than a software business, you have to say, how does that fit our business model? How does that fit our distribution channels? It's not clear to me that the content may be sold through record stores rather than through the software channels that we mm-hmm. have.
Yeah.
And one has to analyze those questions. It's extraordinarily difficult when there isn't any market at all out there now. Mm-hmm. And it's like the early days of microprocessors. Intel was selling primarily development systems rather than chips. You have to seed the market with the development systems. You have to get the tools in the hands of the content creators before the market begins to develop.
Do you have any kind of time frame within your own mind, any kind of gut feel for how long that development process will take? Is it 5 years, 10 years, two?
Well, of course, we're not really in control of it. It's really driven much more.
I know. I just asked for your gut. I just asked for your gut sense of it, though. I know you're not in control of it.
I believe that within 5 years we will see substantial consumer presence of multimedia. But understand, I don't believe there's going to be this thing called the multimedia market any more than there's a thing called the graphics market today. There will simply be a time when every computer has sound capability and video capability, and it's integrated with everything else the computer does. You aren't going to buy a separate multimedia box. It will simply be part of what you use in a business environment or a home environment. These pieces will come together.
Okay. You made an interesting reference in this to the cyberspace project, which I think you referred to in one of the stories, because I did mention it. The Autodesk project and a story I did on virtual reality, but the point of getting attention for the company doing something cutting edge like that, I think is well taken. What do you? I've been trying to talk with people and see where the commercial prospects really lie for virtual reality and you have one of the projects that seems farthest along in terms of commercialization.
They were shipping in third quarter.
Yeah. Is this the, you know, as some would have us to believe, the, a whole new way of relating to electronics, or is it more something that's going to just be incremental and sort of like multimedia, just end up being a kind of aspect of the computing experience, but not necessarily, we're not going to necessarily... it's not necessarily going to be an industry in itself.
I believe the latter will be an aspect of the industry. In the 60s, there was what was called the computer graphics industry, and it was companies like Adage and so forth that sold graphic devices. And today, every machine that Sun sells has graphics in it. But it's not a graphics machine. It's just mm-hmm. that graphics is the way you get at the machine. In virtual reality, eventually, I believe that elements of that technology will become mainstream parts of the way people interact with computers.
Is there anything you can single out? Is the glove one of those features you think is...
Well, I'd rather not talk about specific pieces of hardware. It's kind of like talking about mice versus trackballs in 1968. I mean, the technology is a way to provide more direct human interaction with computers mm-hmm. in the same sense that the mouse was an improvement over the keyboard.
Yeah.
Whether the glove, whether infrared head position sensors, whether goggles you wear or screens that have LCD screens, whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The technology is not the point. We're struggling along with extraordinarily crude technology today.
Mm-hmm.
We're about where Xerox PARC was with the Alpha in the mid-1970s.
Yeah.
They had something that was extraordinarily expensive, made only in tiny quantities that they were using to work on how you use, how people would use this technology when it became widely available. Not until the Macintosh, almost 10 years later, was that technology available at an affordable price. I don't think it'll take 10 years with at least the first elements of virtual reality.
What the product that you guys have for later this year, is it predicated on any particular hardware?
You can use it with a mouse and a VGA.
Oh, okay.
And you can enter the hardware you have now, and it will support everything up to the highest end devices.
Okay. Makes you define it as cyber or virtual reality? If we're not using any special headgear or special hand hardware, what?
Well, that's not virtual reality. Virtual reality is the emulation of a three-dimensional environment inside the computer.
And so how are you doing that? How are you achieving it if not through the means of the hardware?
The hardware has nothing to do with it. The virtual reality, a 3D CAD system is a primitive virtual reality system.
I guess.
What?
Yeah. I guess.
I believe that.
Okay.
No, what our cyberspace system does is allow the definition of a virtual world and then allows interaction between human being or beings and the objects within that world. You can put on the headgear, you can walk around inside the world, mm-hmm. you can climb and you can fly and you can pick things up and drop things.
Well, you can
do the very same thing with a mouse and a VGA. It's a lot more real if you do it with the headgear.
Well, if you do it with the mouse and the VGA, how is it different than the CAD software you have out there now? How is it different then?
Because it knows about physics, amongst other things. The fact that objects collide with one another, that there's gravity in the world, that things deform when you fall on them. It's a model of the world.
Okay.
And I suppose you could say that the very highest-end CAD systems have that capability also. But that's the very, very high-end of CAD, and none of them really provide access to that to the world builder.
Okay.
They're really concerned with the
Do any of your systems qualify in that very high-end that you're talking about then?
AME, yes.
AME would have some of that knowledge of the world.
Yeah, it knows about the collisions between objects and intersections and interference fits.
Have you ever seen this in these products?
I haven't seen a demo of the cyberspace product, but I have seen a lot of VPL stuff and NASA stuff and the stuff at UNC.
You've seen AutoCAD?
Yeah.
You've seen AME?
No, that I haven't.
You've seen our multimedia product?
Maybe I haven't, didn't stick out of my mind.
Generic CAD? AutoSketch?
AutoSketch, well, I can come back for a demo of that one.
Okay.
I mean, I'd certainly be, glad to do that. I mean, this was kind of, so why don't we do that?
Mea
culpa, okay? Mea culpa. I'm a Macintosh. Actually, I'm a big Macintosh user, and I don't use your Macintosh CAD, so I would be most familiar with Macintosh software. But, all right. So, well, what can we break down, I guess, to the essentials of what are some of the changes that have been made over the past year, why you think they'll help the company, and maybe we can go through some of them and just discuss a little bit why they're going to benefit the company.
Would you prefer to direct that to me or the people that are making the changes?
Same thing. I mean, just jump in. Just jump in.
Looking at, certainly in the early part of the year, the reorganization was probably the news at that point. And what we've done, if you look at the history of the company, we've grown from a small company to still a centralized large company. And what happens in an environment like that, you generally get displaced authority and responsibility. I mean, people can make decisions in the company, but they may not have the corresponding responsibility for those. This was an attempt to put the authority and responsibility of each product in that product group.
Okay.
So rather than a person at the top essentially controlling what happens with each product, you really put the authority and responsibility in the hands of the people who are doing the job. What that has done is it has essentially pushed the, once again, the authority and responsibility down the organizational chart into the hands of the people.
Is there anything tangible so far you've seen from that?
I'm sure Ruth can attest to this. What happens with a typical organization with marketing, finance, product development, you always, no matter what the company is, you end up with communication problems between the departments. What this does, it puts all of those functions into the hands, once again, of the people who are doing the job. The people who produce the products are now responsible for marketing those products. They're responsible for coming up with the budgets for those products. They're responsible for the profitability of those products. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the responsibility pushed down into the people who are.
And all I asked was, do you see any tangible benefits yet from that?
Is there anything you
can point to?
An intangible benefit is that every single business unit is delivering a product this year with a launch plan that was developed within that business unit.
Yeah.
We're not shortchanging the smaller business units in favor of the AutoCAD business unit.
Mm-hmm.
If that business unit is bringing in 3% of the revenue, it should have 3% of the resources,
mm-hmm.
not 50, not zero, but something appropriate to the size of its market and our commitment in it. And we've been able to delegate to the heads of those business units the authority, the power, the money, the people to get the job done, and they're getting it done.
Is there one example you might single out of a particular business unit that you're either especially pleased of the way it's responded to this kind of structure?
I'm just saying,
I'm just saying, I mean, obviously I cannot even contemplate trying to mention all of them, so what comes to mind as one worth mentioning?
Well, obviously, as the only business unit represented right here, AutoCAD. one of the things that that the reorganization has done for business unit is really allowed us to bring the product marketing and the technology people together as a group. To really,
they used to be separate.
Yes, like
okay.
many other organizations.
They were functionally
they were
organized.
Functional.
And so now you have R&D people within your business unit?
We have R&D, we have technology, we have we have marketing, and we have many of the other traditional functions that you
okay.
find in a company.
And so you're sort of like a CEO of a company in effect, right? Except for the finance arm.
We have finance also within the group. So
okay.
that allows us to really take a look at what is happening in the marketplace. Really review any trends that we might see happening in the marketplace, take a look at what's happening with sales, and also has allowed us to really move much quicker way as far as what we might may have done in the implementation of some technologies. When did that take effect? That was the first of July, and we had been working on it for a couple of months prior to that.
Okay. And so you got about 9 months, close to 8 months.
A gestation period, right?
Yeah, under your belt. Can you single out some, tangible benefit about? I mean, are you seeing faster results in product development?
Definitely, we are getting much faster results. Time to market for product now has increased, I would say, by a good 50%.
Okay, it was taking you to get a product to market?
That might vary, but by having all the people working together in teams, or smaller teams, we really have been able to cut across a lot of functional lines.
Mm-hmm.
And the result of that really is the number of products that we're going to be shipping this year.
More of a parallel development stream.
Correct.
Yes, we had never worked on, for example, release 13 of AutoCAD until we finished release 12.
Okay.
And the release 13 project is actually well along the road now because the AutoCAD business unit has the resources that it can spread amongst those.
So that's what you mean by parallel.
Right.
Because you're working on not just the next version, but the one after
that
at the same time. You're just about to release 13.
12.
12. But so you presumably now have 14 under development as well? Is that
13?
13.
But you don't have 14 under development.
Well, major components of 14 which are the underpinnings of 13.
What about...
You just gave me an example. I'm not trying. This is a trick question. I was presuming since you said you now do two of
correct.
Them.
Correct. We're 8 months into this. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but we're already 6 months into release 13, which means that 6 months ago we had 12 and 13 okay. going in parallel. Okay. We're now 6 months into that. Release 12 will be coming out midpoint of next year, at which point we'll be a year into the development of 13 under the old environment, we would have been starting 13 at that point.
Okay. And not even at that point. We would really be starting 13 not just after the first customer ship of release 12, but after
the bug fixes.
Not so much bug fixes, but remember AutoCAD runs on the Macintosh and the Sun.
So
after
you do all the course
station, after we do all the ports.
Okay.
That really slows you down.
Okay. And also to address John's point, many of the things we're working on release 13 really are the underpinnings for release 14, 15, okay. and the okay. CAD system of the future.
Okay, so this is a major upgrade in that sense.
Absolutely.
Too. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's a good example.
I have another example. Retail products, I think, is worth mentioning.
What's your name again?
Carolyn Aver.
Carolyn Aver. I'm sorry, Carolyn. Yeah.
It's okay. Our retail products division, it comes from our generic subsidiary, and so we bought generic software and pretty much left them alone within the generic product line. They did take on responsibility for AutoSketch along the way, but for the most part was really focused on generic. Having really given them the full responsibility of a business unit, they have made numerous presentations to the management group, and we've really endorsed them to become a full retail products business unit. They've come out, one of the things John alluded to before is the Home Series, which is a low-end $59 product that focuses on bath or kitchen. Those products have done extremely well. They'll be coming out this year with a number of products that are completely outside of the CAD industry.
Oh, will they?
And
okay.
Yeah, we can't tell you what
you
they
can't
are.
Can't tell what areas they are.
But they're working on three different products come to mind now.
And this, the generic software thing, that's the result of an acquisition
turned into Autodesk Retail Products.
It turned into Autodesk Retail Products. And when was that made, that acquisition?
The acquisition was made in 89.
Okay.
And as part of the restructuring, that turned into Retail Products. And so they've really changed the direction of that organization over the last 6 months because they've been given the ability to run as a business unit. They're projecting revenue increases of over, I think, 75%, and really are planning on building a pretty big market out of that.
Okay.
So there's another thing.
And moving into areas outside of
CAD.
Of CAD, okay.
Yep.
Going back to the original question of what has happened in the reorganization,
yes.
Another large part of that we're seeing results from right now. Last year we went into the reorganization of Europe. Before we were operating in Europe out of a subsidiary in England, Switzerland, and Sweden.
Uh-huh.
Now what we've done is we've set up offices in virtually every country of Europe. The reason here being is we now have a direct staff in those countries that are supporting application developers, that are supporting the customers, that are supporting the dealers. This was always removed, one level of distribution removed, because that was happening from Switzerland. So once again, we've put more staff, more capital into each of the countries in Europe. We're seeing quite a lot of results from that. I mean, probably the most obvious is Germany. Germany, Italy, Spain are countries that are doing incredibly well as a result.
What's the overseas sales, the breakdown of revenue?
About 55% international, 45% domestic.
Okay. Now, that's international. That's not just Europe.
Yeah,
that's
But so you're basically hiring more nationals or more folks within these individual markets.
We always even when we had a subsidiary in Japan and Scandinavia, we always hired nationals. But yes, as we go into each country, we're staffing them entirely with nationals of those countries.
Have you been adding more people in Europe?
Absolutely.
At a higher rate than you would in the U.S. or
we were last year.
You were last year.
And,
okay. And you got to the point you
yes,
wanted to.
Yes. I mean, that's all virtual double in sales in several of those markets.
did you?
Yeah.
Germany in particular?
Germany, Italy.
And Spain.
Doubled last year.
Yeah, in local currency.
Just about.
Just about doubled. In local currency.
And,
sorry, just put all the caveats.
Once again, last year, what I'd like to point out.
Are you talking about the calendar year, or are you talking about or the fiscal
year? Fiscal.
We're talking about the fiscal year. Okay. Your fiscal year ended January 31st.
Yeah.
So it's roughly
92 over 91.
It's roughly the year 91 we're talking about.
Yeah.
When you say it doubled. Okay.
But last year, going through that restructuring had an impact on our profitability, because we believed this was something we needed to do to expand that market and mm-hmm. help revenues. Mm-hmm. That did in fact happen, and we got the benefit of that this year. So, you know, that's part of the reorganization.
And we're now doing that in the Far East, and we've reorganized the United States, the Americas, the Western Hemisphere, Malcolm's division, on that model.
Right. Okay.
So we now have a clear division of the company in the product-related activities, which the business unit managers like Ruth are responsible for,
uh-huh.
and the geography-related sales, customer-related activities, which are organized in Europe, Americas, and uh-huh. the Far East. So we have a much more manageable structure mm-hmm. In terms of what the CEO sees, in terms of who's responsible for each territory, who's responsible for each product. And each one of those heads has essentially complete discretion to run their territory or their business area within budget.
Okay. Let me hop around on a couple of things, because I want to... The whole issue of AutoCAD's pricing, which was discussed some in your memo, John, and I don't know where that stands, but have you taken steps to respond in some way to your concern that maybe it's priced too high, or the premium that's a little too much of a good thing, or
I don't believe it's priced too high. I don't believe I said that. I come back to my statement that there is a difference between a retail product and a professional product that's a lot more than just the price. If you look at the half million CAD systems we've sold at less than $600.
What you did say was it would seem wise to revisit the question of AutoCAD's price and ask whether it is consonant with the pricing of software products, which will maintain and expand their leadership in 1990. So did you revisit the question, and what did you come to the conclusion?
We found that AutoCAD was encountering no price pressure whatsoever in the market. In fact, in Japan, we sell AutoCAD for more than twice the U.S. price. In Germany, we sell it for close to...
Well, they deserve it.
Let me finish, because I'm about to say something that is, I think, rather important. In Germany, we sell it for close to twice the U.S. price. In India, we sell it for a fraction of the U.S. price. In the Soviet Union, we sell it for 25,000 rubles, whatever that's worth today. Mm-hmm. Okay, we price the product based on where it has to be in that market, based on what engineers are paid in those markets, based on what companies can afford in order to carry out our market share strategy. In the United States, we are not seeing we're not seeing competitive products take away sales from AutoCAD based on price. Mm-hmm. And so in that environment, there is no reason at this point to change the pricing of AutoCAD.
Okay. Okay. The another thing you've mentioned in there that sort of relates to pricing, and I wanted to ask you about was the nightmare scenario of Microsoft coming up with I think a nicely named product, Windows Engineer, and you know, within a year, their market share exceeded 50%. I think that is a nightmare scenario. I don't think Microsoft could make anything go off that well. But do you have any sense that some other company, whether it's Microsoft or other big company, actually has that intention to jump into this market?
I know of one big company that does. That's us. And on March 4th, we're shipping AutoCAD for Windows at a $99 premium to all of our installed base. Okay. And we intend to have a lot more than 50% market share by the end of this year.
All right, but is there any, you know, has Microsoft, I mean, has Bill actually admired your memo, as I know you must know, and did he take your advice? Did Philippe Kahn take your advice? Did Jim Manzi take your advice?
As far as I can tell, in Bill's memo, he said that they weren't interested in markets like that. I think that the wise people in this industry, such as Philippe and Bill and Jim Manzi, recognize that there are differences between retail mass market products and professional products, and that one of the things they would have to do is not simply put the product in AutoCAD, but rather build the kind of dealer distribution support channel that Autodesk has spent 10 years building. That's the way professional products are sold. And people that have taken the retail tech, and we've had retail competitors in lots of markets, including companies like IBM, over the last 10 years, and they've never been able to crack the distribution channel. The professional products, and we're not just talking about CAD software. We're talking about the other things these professionals buy, like drafting tables, like the high-end plotters, are typically sold through a dealer environment. And we have, at this moment, complete control of that dealer environment.
So you don't have any sense that there's anything brewing then?
I do not.
Okay.
There are always things brewing. There are any number of competitors out there that would love to dethrone us. I don't think there's anything brewing in terms of a competitive threat that's
more... from someone the size of a Microsoft or a Borland or... No.
Actually, in the history of the company, I mean, the nightmare scenario is the one we're competing against IBM, Computer Vision, McDonnell Douglas, and everyone else in 84, 85. Right. I think at that time, if you wanted to lose sleep,
those are the people to worry about.
Losing sleep. And they all came in with very competitive products. I remember Crossroads by McDonnell Douglas, which though was aimed right at our heart. But once again, the whole issue revolved around the distribution of the product.
And also the customer's investment in it. If you have put the entire asset base of your architectural practice or the drawing base of your factory into AutoCAD, and you've trained all your people on AutoCAD, you have to have a compelling reason. I mean, and let's face it, this is a world in which there's such a thing as software piracy.
So did you
and the fact that people will pay $3,500 for another copy of AutoCAD versus just stealing one indicates that the channel is delivering productivity to them that is worth paying for.
Well, given that, were you engaging in some hyperbole then in this section of the memo, trying to maybe, I don't know, what, just... spark concern where maybe there wasn't, or spark some sense of urgency? Was the idea to be sort of exaggerate the straits the company was in?
No, I was not attempting to exaggerate the straits the company was in. I was attempting, titling it Nightmare Scenario, to describe a situation the company could be in if the company did not have a strong, well-positioned Windows product in both the retail market and the professional market.
Okay.
We will be launching both the retail product and the professional product this year. The first retail product will be Sketch for Windows, and that will be shipped in the second quarter.
And that's the first Windows product the company will have shipped?
It will actually be the second, because AutoCAD will be the first.
And when is AutoCAD coming?
March 1st.
March 1st, okay. Yeah, my question at the beginning about this late for Windows, I mean clearly... Of the major category leaders, as far as I can tell, you're the last to come in with a Windows product, and that's the only sense. I meant it was late. You might not be late according to your own internal compass, but has it cost you much to be coming out in March as opposed to six months ago? Or
well, first of all, in terms of category leaders, it will be the first professional CAD system to come out on Windows.
Now, you're the leader of that. I'm comparing you with other category leaders.
In terms of cost, today, Windows, 16-bit Windows, Windows 3.0, 3.1, is not a competitive platform for CAD. It is substantially slower than a raw 386 machine. And not until...
Just running the DOS version.
Running the DOS version, which runs at 32-bit mode. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
When Windows NT or 32-bit Windows comes out, then Windows will be a competitive platform. At this point, until that happens, professional CAD under Windows will be a relatively painful thing to do.
Okay.
Our goal is to get the product in the market so people, and there are people who can benefit from the inter-application operability, cut and paste.
But
those
you don't see a wholesale shift to your Windows products.
We expect a wholesale shift to the 16-bit product, which will then turn into a flood when 32-bit Windows comes out. We will have a 32-bit Windows product at the same time 32-bit Windows becomes generally available.
Okay.
That's the point that Windows will become a workstation platform comparable to Sun or the new Macintosh with System 7. And that's everybody has to wait for that, and getting there before that happens is really getting there early in that sense.
So let me just ask a general subject of Windows, because I cover Microsoft pretty intensively, and I've been around the block in 88 and 89, in particular, late 89 and early 90, about Windows and its future and what it meant for people's application strategies. And I mean, how would you guys characterize yourselves? Were you wait and see, doubters? Were you on the Windows bandwagon, but like you said, for technical reasons, it didn't pay to really push it?
We were really there, depending on how you look at it. Yeah. We were there before everybody else, but in a different way. We were one of the very first on the OS 2 bandwagon.
Let me finish.
Windows and OS 2 are, from an application programmer standpoint, essentially the same system. You change some of the function calls, you change some of the guts, but in fact, they are basically the same. So at the time that Windows was not a viable platform for anything until Windows 3.0.
Uh-huh. Okay, agreed.
So we were up on OS 2 1.0 long before Windows 3.0 came along. So we had the API calls, we had the dialog box interface, we squeezed all of that into the memory model, all of which come directly over to Windows.
Okay, so you were able to recoup the investment in that OS 2 work.
We were, in fact, running under Windows 3.0 a couple of weeks after we got the system development kit. I mean, going from that point to having something that performs, is professionally packaged, has the appropriate documentation in the help file, that takes time. But we didn't lose any of our investment in OS 2, and it got us on Windows much sooner than we would have been there otherwise.
Okay. Well, when did you? There are points in here where you reflect about, can we throw more, be more intense about this? Was there a point in time when you decided, we've got to just ratchet up the energy level that we have behind the Windows AutoCAD project? When would that have been?
Well, as soon as we saw that that it was going to be a commercially viable product and that it was going to bring something.
So sometime soon after May of 90, then.
Before that. I mean, we shifted most of our people off of OS 2 onto Windows well before information.
Well before then. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was 91. You say 90?
When was Windows 3.0 introduced? May of 90? May of 90.
90, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about May of 90. I'm asking you whether prior to the introduction of 3.0, did you do all this shifting of resources, or was it after? Yeah, because this memo is a whole 11 months after Windows shipped, and by then it was...
We were already working on it.
I'm asking you when, though. I mean, was it after May of 90 that you...
Well, Ruth wasn't in charge of that at the time.
Okay.
I was in the middle of that project, perhaps I should give you the facts. We were working with the 3.0 SDK before 3.0 ever shipped.
Okay.
We were a Windows developer receiving the SDK and putting the product on there as early as anybody else.
Now, was there a point in time where you decided, hey, let's really throw a lot more resources behind getting this Windows product done?
That I don't recall the precise month, but it was the month that the whole OS 2 blow up happened, when we realized that nobody knew
what was happening
with OS 2. Yes.
Okay, so January 91.
No. That was mid 90.
Oh, okay. All right. I put you down at the relay.
Because understand, right, so we worked very closely with Microsoft, and what we were hearing from Microsoft during this entire period of time was that OS 2 was the engineering platform of choice, and it only became clear in mid-90 that it wasn't going to be. And
but did it become clear to you in mid-90, just a few months after Windows shipped then, you're saying? That's mid-90. I mean, May...
Is this a congressional investigation?
I'm just...
I'm not,
it's important. I'm just... It's important that I get some sense of accuracy about when it was.
I don't spend all of my time writing down logs of what happened.
Could someone check on that?
Okay.
Because
I don't understand why this is important. I mean, we were working, we work, as we always have, on every potential platform that may be a contender to be on the engineer's desk. And that meant we were working on OS 2.1.0, the 2.0 pre-releases, the Windows 3.0 SDK, all at the same time. In terms of the point that we said, look, OS 2 just isn't going to make it in the near future. Let's move all those people over to Windows and stop working on OS 2. I don't recall what month that was.
Okay.
I don't think
I'm saying is that in April of 91, you said, we have to revisit the level of support we're planning for Windows. And prior to that, page 13, you say, and this is quite true, this makes getting caught out without a Windows version of your program just about the worst possible thing that can happen to a DOS application vendor these days. That's true, and you talked about how the one central and virtually unquestioned tenet of Autodesk strategy has been platform independence, and I thought you made some astute analysis of the problems with that. And you said we have to revisit the level of support we're planning for Windows. So in April of 91, there's some sense here that there wasn't enough support for Windows. That's the only thing the English seems to indicate here.
A similar
failure to comply with ground rules for Windows applications may hurt us severely.
Yes.
And every week that passes without our thinking about how to address this problem adds to the danger. So it's clear that there was some danger in April of 91 that you weren't giving Windows enough attention.
There is some danger in February of 1992 that we are not giving Silicon Graphics or Hewlett Packard or any other contender.
Well, if you were exaggerating there, you can tell me. You can say, I just was exaggerating.
Are you cross-examining me, or would you like me
You can perceive my questions in any way you want. I'm just trying to use the materials at hand here.
Sir, I would answer your questions a lot more if you would listen to my answers and let me finish and not interrupt every answer.
If we had 8 or 10 or 3 days, but if we have a couple of hours, we have to move the thing along. I'm sorry about that, but it's not me who put the time constraints on it.
It's you who were late. Let's go on then. I think, again...
But that's the question, though. The question
I have felt, ever since it became clear to me that OS 2 was not going to become the platform of choice,
mm-hmm.
that there was a great urgency in getting onto Windows, because at that point there was no other possible contender on the horizon unless IBM suddenly came back with an OS 2, as now they may be. But that in any case, Windows was going to be the first platform after DOS that dominated the desktop of our prospects. At that point, and at the point that I wrote that, I believed that 32-bit Windows was much sooner to hit the market than it now is.
Okay.
I was talking about 32-bit Windows there, and I expected at that point 32-bit Windows to be shipping before the end of the year.
Okay.
If 32-bit Windows is a 93 project,
okay,
I feel much less urgency than I thought.
All right, fair enough. That explains. That's a good explanation for it. I mean, the terminology of this is the shorthand often.
Well, I mean, recognize that memo was not written for you. It was written for people within Autodesk.
No, I know. This is why I'm asking the questions about it, because I'm trying to understand what you really meant. If I didn't care about that, I would just take the words at the face value and move on. But I do care about trying to understand what you meant in these in the passages. Okay. One of the things about the analysts, I talked to some analysts after the meeting. I didn't talk to them all, but after a couple, you got the flavor of it. one of the things that was funny is that, I mean, here you try to explain to them, hey, we're trying to tell you something that we think's better for the long term of the company. You know, try to focus on that. Don't try to get caught up in, you know, you have a tendency to be short. Of course, the reaction was totally short term. People just felt, you know, the short term looked terrible to them. They're very, people were very disappointed. I mean, from the standpoint that they didn't understand. They really didn't hear you in that sense. I think you guys strike me as people that would stick to your guns and keep your eye on the ball, but. But how do you manage these expectations of Wall Street, and how is there? I mean, are you can you be impervious to their wrath or their dissatisfaction? I mean, is there a way to just say, well, we're just going to put the blinders on and we're not going to care what they're going to say and just do our game plan? I mean,
I think that's what we've done. And we certainly haven't changed our strategy in the last week coming back from the meeting. So I think that...
Yeah, you didn't all go get a stiff drink after that meeting or something.
I believe that if you talk to the investors, find many of the investors far more sophisticated with regard to what high tech companies have to do
Absolutely.
In times of recession than many of the analysts are.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly. Do you have what big institutional? Are you referring to big institutional investors?
Yeah.
And we met that evening with a number of institutional investors,
so
as well as the entire next day.
And in Boston as well as. In
yeah, went to Boston on Friday.
And you talked with representative from these are funds. Yes. Some funds or another.
I think we calculated that within 24 hours of the meeting, we talked to something close to 50% of our shareholders.
Really?
Face to face.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And the reaction from those guys was?
For the most part, very supportive.
Okay. Because there are quite a few more long-term holders of your shares. Okay. Okay.
And they didn't all necessarily buy in. Top either.
Let's hope not, right? That's right, brother. But okay. So you feel that you've been able to kind of poll some of these folks, and you feel that you have maybe the analysts have been queasy about all this, but the institutional investors are understand what you're trying to.
Yeah. I don't know if poll is the right word. It isn't that we go out and ask for their advice. We've had the opportunity.
No, I meant you polled them after you told them what you were doing. You got you took their pulse.
Right. Yeah. And in a small group, we were able to, continue to address their concerns.
And I don't believe it's accurate to characterize all the analysts as negative. I've read a lot of the analyst reports, and it's one thing to say we're worried about the next quarter or the next year, but many of the analysts do focus on the market share, mm-hmm. on the strategy of the company, on the fact that we actually gained market share last year, and that we're well positioned in this.
Yeah.
I think the analyst is really serving two communities. There's what's going to happen next quarter versus what's going to happen 12 months, 24 months.
Yeah, no, that's true. You're right. Yeah, you're right. One concern that came up with them was about this leadership question. Is who's leading the company, and there's a concern about the interim status of John and Volker, and concern about who your replacement will be, and what can we expect with regards to that?
I think as far as if there's any, and once again going back and quoting another newspaper, which said, and we have the three lame ducks, Green, Walker, and Klein. I would say, if you look at what has happened in the company during the last few months, there's probably been more activity coming out of this company than there has been for quite some time. So, I would hardly consider what is happening, the strategy of a group of lame ducks. I'm the CEO of the company. Volker came over here in the newly created position of Chief Operating Officer. And to be quite frank, that's a position I should have created about a year ago. Believe me, that's certainly...
With him? With him in it?
Not necessarily with him,
but
creating that position with someone in there. I mean, the amount of stress that is relieved just in the period of time he's been here has certainly made a...
Does it make you want to stay?
Well, I'm not going away. I'm not disappearing. I'm staying as chairman of the company. But I've been doing this for quite some time. And in fact, I've been talking about the last 2 years of getting out of this on a day-to-day basis. And if anything, if you want to imply anything from information letter 14, it probably prolonged me not getting out of here by that period of time until I felt that the company was
of the three lame ducks. Al is continuing to hold his position as chairman for the foreseeable future. Volker is continuing to be vice president of European operations, which is the job that he wants, and I'm continuing to work on software development. So after we hire a new CEO, everybody will remain in a role that they currently have, mm-hmm. Interim changes notwithstanding.
Will you also have a new COO then as well?
That's really up to the CEO. But okay. What I would do is when he comes in, I would highly recommend it to him.
Okay.
Before the reorganization, I forget how many direct reports I had, but it was in the 20s. I mean, after the reorganization, I went down to about 18.
You had direct reports in
the
20s?
Yeah. That's the way the company evolved. Well, wow. Even after the reorganization, it only got down to about 8.
That's what you have
about
now?
18.
About 18?
Well, right. But once you put a COO in there, which takes responsibility for the business units, and then essentially...
All the business units report to him.
To the COO.
Yeah.
And then you have the essentially the officers of the company then reporting to the CEO. Mm-hmm. It looks very much like the structure should...
Right.
I don't know what it should look like, but it feels more like the structure should feel like from this end.
Let me just say one more thing to that.
Okay.
And that is that as far as the management team goes, the rest of us have been here anywhere from, if you look, some of our general managers are brand new, to myself who's been with the company for 7 years. And so even though there is some transition in some of those positions, you know, I'm not going anywhere, and I think
there's
the rest of the management team.
And all of our business unit managers, except those that have recently joined, were promoted from within the company. So there hasn't really been a tremendous shift in people. We just have a structure that works a lot better in terms of running a company of this size.
Okay.
I mean, we grew from 50 million to 250 without ever shuffling around the reorganization. And it just accretes to a point that you have too many people reporting to one person for them to be able to effectively manage.
Okay. Do you expect the CEO to be from within or without?
Right. You know, we have a search firm, who's analyzed this. They're looking on the outside. They came up with a list of some very qualified people in the industry that they thought they should contact. Once again, they've broken that down to a short list. They're now contacting those people. There's some good talent out there. So we will interview and see what happens from there. But right now we're trying to find the best possible candidate from a worldwide search.
Uh-huh. Do you have any kind of time frame or
just based on a gut feel of the process so far? It looks as though probably somewhere in the I would imagine the April-ish time frame probably makes sense.
Okay. So that's not that far away.
Right.
What advice will you give to someone about the proper relationship to form with John Walker?
I think to a great degree, the person who comes in will probably have had relationships somewhat like that in other companies. I mean, there are always in a lot of companies you have situations where you have founders and you have CEOs that come in that are not founders.
Right.
I mean,
sure. We'll see
you
again.
If you look at the relationship between John and I've known John for 8 years. I consider the relationship to be a good one. I can think of a lot of other relationships with other founders of other companies that would have been quite painful. So, to a great degree, I would expect that the person coming in should have those. Interpersonal skills already in place. I will be on as chairman of the board, and whatever coaching or assistance I can give that person, I certainly will. But to a great degree, I would hope they would possess some of those skills when they come into the company.
And if I can talk about the other side of that relationship, it's difficult to talk about a personal relationship with somebody that you haven't met. I will certainly say to the new CEO what I've said to Al on many occasions. I'm not interested in running this company. I, as a shareholder, am interested in this company being a great success and fulfilling its potential. If I think any time in the last 6 years, since Al became president, he had said, John, you're not helping, just be a shareholder, I would have said that that's fine with me. If you'd like me to just sit on the program, I'll sit on the program. If you'd like me to just be a shareholder, I'll be a shareholder. I have no interest whatsoever in pulling strings, or being a hidden power, I have an interest in developing products that I believe are very important for this company. That's what I want to do, and nothing will make me happier than getting back on a plane to Switzerland and going off and disappearing for 3 years developing new products for this company. And I hope that when the new CEO comes in and takes charge, that he will have no need to interact with me other than calling me on the phone every now and then or seeing demos of the new products I develop. And that's the relationship. I had that relationship
with Al. Was
that
was, Al the, was,
for,
that was the relationship you had with Al from, what, 86 through...
Through this year. I mean, we would speak about two or three times a year for a couple of hours.
On the phone? On the telephone?
No, in person.
Or in person.
And everything went just fine in that regard. I think that I don't believe there really was any great conflict. It's not a conflict issue. It's an issue of a company that needed to change its fundamental mindset.
Mm-hmm.
From top to bottom, not Al's mindset, not Carolyn's mindset, not Malcolm's mindset, but everybody all over the company. And that's a process that companies have to do every now and then if they want to survive when the rules are changing.
Agreed.
And that's the process that I'm hoping to contribute to here. I'm hoping to get it done as soon as possible.
Has it been painful for the organization to go through this?
You know, in some parts, I would imagine there was pain associated with it. But that, you know, that the opposite side of that coin is just denying it, doing nothing about it, and losing your competitive edge would be even more painful. So I think everybody realized it. I mean, it's one of those things of, oh damn, you hate it when he's right. But you know, the other option is totally to ignore it. And I think everybody in the company looked at this and said, yes, there are things that need to be done. And rather than just denying that the letter was ever written or denying that we were in that position, everybody pulled together. And I think the company is in a lot stronger position for it. And in fact, being on, you know, if you want to look at being on the receiving end of that, I think it would be damn healthy for a lot of other companies in the United States to go through the same self-analysis.
We can make a long list.
I have to say, 10 years ago, I held this meeting in my living room. 16 people came on Saturday. Well, last weekend, we held a meeting in Marin Civic Center, voluntary meeting, Saturday afternoon. We filled the Civic Center with employees.
Was that to
of this
explain?
Company. It was to explain what we were going to try to accomplish in the next 10 years.
And this was coincident with the analyst meetings? Is that? Was that
Right after the meeting.
But it was also.
With the beginning of the second decade of the company, it was the actual 10th anniversary.
Yeah. Wow! So it was a kind of bittersweet party,
I wouldn't describe it as bittersweet at all. I mean, the first thing was that there were some cynics saying that we might get turnout of 50 people among the employees, and we literally filled the Civic Center.
Which was, what, several thousand?
Well, not that. I would say
1,600.
So 6 to 800. Well, 6
to
800 employees in the U.S.
Okay, in the U.S. you'll have 700.
Yes.
Okay.
But we had essentially complete turnout of everybody in all Bay Area employees voluntarily came to this thing.
Okay.
And I think that really indicates the spirit. I mean, this was a voluntary meeting. Primarily here, the senior management and the business unit management describe what we're going to try to accomplish in the next year and the next 10. And everybody showed up, startling some people that didn't think they would.
Did you give an address? Or?
Yes.
So, and you did, and, right. and they all, okay, so you made presentations.
And we demoed all the new products we talked about. So.
And it was 2 o'clock on a sunny Saturday afternoon. Right.
When you started? Or,
yeah.
When did it end?
Five.
So you guys were fairly efficient, didn't you? Okay. Well, I mean, there's obviously been a therapeutic effect from this information letter, and as you mentioned, I guess there was no 13, but there were 12 before that. Will there be a 15 at some point?
Or? Well, there was no 9, actually.
There was no 9 either?
There was a 12. There was a 12. And a 13. I just missed 9.
Okay.
If you read my book, The Autodesk File, there's a story about why number 9 disappeared.
Oh, okay.
I will write one if I feel the need. Right now, I feel no need. I think that information letter 14 stands, in my opinion, as an accurate portrayal of the transition that we're going through right now. And probably, and I don't see at this point, unless some huge surprise happens, like Microsoft withdraws Windows or something, that the competitive environment is going to change very much. It didn't change very much between 82 and 90, really, in terms of our market. And I don't expect to see any kind of really radical shift beyond the kinds that I discussed there. If I do, I'll certainly bring them to the attention of people. I hope that as Autodesk becomes a more reactive, rapidly moving, rapid time to market company, and the changes we've made over the last year are all to that end, that we will be able to adapt more smoothly to the changes in the competitive environment rather than with a big lurch as was necessary this time.
But you see you yourself returning to the programming work you want, and in terms of the follow-through on the implementation of all these things, you won't be involved in that.
I don't see any need to be.
Okay.
I believe that we have strong managers in place who, with the support of a CEO that understands the opportunity we have, can bring the products to market. I'm not an expert in developing marketing plans or putting together rollout plans or in public relations. We have people who are, and they're the ones who have to do that. If I'm an expert at anything, it's finding opportunities that we should be getting into that are going to pay off in 4 or 5 years out, and that's something that's best done with a very small group of people with very limited funds and then brought to the attention of the company when that opportunity comes to manifest itself.
What are some of the programming accomplishments that you're most proud of, or you think had the biggest benefit for Autodesk, and you know, over maybe the second half of the 80s rather than the whole course of the company. But what are some of the things in recent times that you felt had the
I think making the prototype of AME, demonstrating that we could integrate solid modeling with AutoCAD, is the one that springs to mind as the most important for the company. That's really what let us position ourselves as something a lot different from a drafting company. Nobody else had ever essentially included solid modeling as an integral part of the CAD system.
When did that happen?
The prototype was completed on July 20th, 1989.
And then is that typical? I mean, because someone has told me this story. Then did you hand that off to?
I typically hand that prototype off to a product. The prototype is presented. People say, "Is this a worthwhile thing to do?" That happened to be one that was accepted very quickly. I've done others that never have been accepted, and that's fine too. But then a software development process begins. That was a complicated one because we were selling a standalone product as a solid modeler at the time at a $5,000 price point. And I was proposing integrating it with AutoCAD and selling it for $500. So that's not the kind of decision you just throw off the coin and make instantly. But the decision was made to do that. A major software development effort that lasted the better part of the year began and involved close to a dozen people.
Were you involved in
that?
No,
I was not involved
in
that. I was off.
You handed off that prototype
and went on to work on the next project.
Okay. Now, so is that your typical style to bring a program to that point where you can then hand it off to a development team?
No, I also was
you
involved.
You will finish your product too?
I've also been involved. I did the product after that CA lab entirely myself with the help of one other person all the way to shipment.
Oh, okay.
I did. I'm sorry,
I got to catch up with you. Yeah. That CA lab was done after or before?
After AME.
And when did you finish that one? Do you recall?
Don't recall it.
Okay. So that would have been 91, though, or 91?
No, that was probably like 89, actually.
Oh, late 80. Oh, okay.
Okay.
So shortly on the heat.
Sorry?
Release 12.
Well, and then in another mode, I was involved in the down and dirty debugging of release 11. I often jumped into debugging of the final phase of AutoCAD
creating
manuals because I've written lots of pieces of it, and I have knowledge that kind of spreads over the product. In general, if Ruth or somebody says, "John, we need you to help on this," and convinces me that that's the best way I can benefit the company, I'll jump in and do it.
How do you usually broach the subject? With an email or?
Email or just ask.
Just what, call up and ask them?
Just ask.
Yeah.
You can always find it by email.
So you've got a variety of experiences here between just doing a product like CA Lab from start to finish.
With one other person.
Okay. Was that person in Switzerland with you, or?
No, I was in California.
Oh, you were in California at the time for CA Lab?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well,
when did you move?
Only May of last year.
May of last year. Okay. Sure. Well, so you moved. You moved shortly after this memo.
Yeah, I had announced that I was going to move before the end of.
And prior to that, you were living here. You were living in
California.
In California. Okay. So that's why you saw more of him than another.
But for example,
no, I would not say saw more of me.
What's the program?
My communication was primarily email or telephone.
Even when you lived
when I was living in Near Beach. I think I actually, for a 6 month period, the last 6 months, I think I've gotten to the U.S. more than I got to San Diego from Near Beach in '89.
It's true. So even something like debugging. Now, AutoCAD 12. When was that? That's the current release of AutoCAD
that we're working on. That will be shipped in the second quarter of this year.
And you actually worked on debugging of that.
John debugging and development of some pieces of it. Yes.
Okay.
But he has a major feature that John implemented within this release.
Well, I mean, and I think in terms of continuity, I was working on that feature before I got on the plane to Switzerland. Mm-hmm. I got off the plane and went on working on it, submitted it from Switzerland. So in terms of what I was doing, moving to Switzerland made absolutely no difference at all.
Is there anything cumbersome about the physical separation?
No.
No.
We've been that way since 82. Many of our programmers still work from home.
Oh, really?
And we're all linked together by fast data links and email. And in fact, in Switzerland, I'm on a faster data link than I was in Deer Beach. So,
does it actually come faster, do you think?
It's
close.
Well, it was 9600 baud, now it's 56 kb. So,
that's a lot faster.
Yeah.
No, that's and you work from home?
Often, although I work more out of the office.
Oh, there is an office, though. There is an office.
It's not just a technical center. We're actually going to be doing our manufacturing and shipping from there also. We're sending
this is, how do you pronounce the name of the town?
The canton is Neuchâtel.
Oh, okay.
We're in the town of Marin,
M-A-R-I-N.
Very convenient.
M-A-R-I-N. That couldn't have been a coincidence. Huh?
It was entirely a coincidence, yes.
It's a hot tub in the
So a lot of your programmers do work at home. Within the AutoCAD projects, the different releases, you have an R&D manager that reports to you, right? Or
I have a counterpart who's a chief technical officer.
Oh, okay. So the chief technical officer, he's probably got the AutoCAD project future release broken up into different groups.
Correct.
And then each group member reports to them or something. They must get together and see each other, but the members of the of those groups, some of them may be working at home.
Yeah, they'll typically come in once a week.
Okay. Because a lot of people talk about this place having, you know, this culture of the programmer and the, I mean, how does that evidence itself some people say to me, well, they let you bring your dog to work. I don't consider that the litmus test of a great employer, but
the AutoCAD business unit's finance manager brings his dog and parrot to work. So I don't think that it's unique to programmers.
Not to mention
the credit manager brings her dog to work.
And that was the first dog. But I think in terms of the programmer culture, I've never really understood this programmer culture per se, in the sense that within the first 8 months of the company, essentially right after we started shipping our first product, we immediately had more people in marketing and sales than we had people programming, and have ever since. The mid-80s, when we were so successful and nobody was writing stories about us, the word on the street was, well, we were a company with a mediocre product and great marketing. And I mean, that was a common slam that our competitors could throw against us, okay? And so, I mean, I think that we have always been a very aggressive marketing, sales, distribution company. We've built a dealer channel that didn't exist, and we control that channel, and it's a great asset of this company. You don't succeed at that if you have a mediocre product. You've got to have a good product. But I don't think, if I look at this company, I don't see it as being unbalanced in those respects.
Well, I wasn't suggesting it's unbalanced, but I'm just saying that there seems to be a fair amount of, I mean, it's unusual for the kind of candid debate that you have had. I mean, you mentioned that, you know, there are other companies, there certainly are plenty of other companies that are ripe for it, more in the older industrial sectors of the economy. But, I mean, a lot of these companies are very hierarchical. I mean, you got to remember, we don't just, our readers just aren't in California. I mean, you know, you got to, you know, when I had this conversation with you the first time on the phone, I tried to impress upon you that maybe you took it as a matter of course that you might have a candid discussion with John about, you know, how things were going. But in a lot of companies, it's considered very unusual. You know, the wisdom comes from the top and it goes down.
Part of the company is that the reason that attracted the people here in the beginning was probably that structure.
Can
I jump in on this? That's as much Al's style as it is John's. I mean, that's a credit to Al's management style, and I would guess, John, not putting words in your mouth when you were talking about Al earlier, it's exactly because Al doesn't come in and say, I know everything, and therefore you're going to do it my way, that the organization has developed the way it has. And so that's as much Al's style, I think, as you know, anything else.
And I think this isn't a matter of some, you know, California lifestyle company or something like that. We do things that are effective and productive. And
I understand.
If a programmer works at home and works 16 hours a day versus he'd work 8 hours a day if he had to spend 2 hours commuting to the office, that's a productivity gain. If it weren't a productivity gain, we wouldn't do it that way.
Right.
And so I think many of the things that other companies are talking about, you know, telecommuting, well, that's kind of exotic. I guess it's becoming commonplace now. But we've been doing it since 1982, and it was tough in 1982, you know, like mailing floppy disks around. Okay, but
were you mailing
floppy disks?
Through the U.S. Postal Service.
That's right. We were mailing the AutoCAD source code around, and we did that until 84 was when we first got the first email that worked.
That's funny.
Also, our programming staff have a very good business sense about them. I mean, they will ask, why do you want this particular functionality or this feature set in a product? And, you know, what is the market case for it? And are we, in fact, is this going to be the quote-unquote $25 million feature? So before they program, they're very, very careful and clear about wanting to know, what is this going to do to us and for us in the marketplace?
And I think in terms of who we recruit, if you look at our employees throughout the company, our technical people are not, for the most part, mathematicians, super experts in R&D. Many of them came out of AutoCAD dealer environments. Many of them were customers who started using
the product
and then became programmers. That's right. So we've tried to bring people, and on the sales side, at least as much.
Many of your programmers come out of the dealer community?
Because we've encouraged our dealers to become software developers. Those developers develop products. There's more than 400 products that work with AutoCAD.
How many programmers would you say have at the company then? I mean, worldwide. What would the worldwide number be? I mean, we're talking 500?
No. 250?
250? No, it's about 100. 165 was the number I used to use last year, but that doesn't count some people overseas.
So less than 200?
Less than 200 is accurate.
Okay. Are you trained as EE or computer science or?
General engineering.
General engineering. Well, you have a BA or?
BS.
BS, okay. Are advanced degrees common here? Or?
We have people with them. We have people without them.
Yeah. Okay. Hmm.
Common sense is probably more prevalent.
Are you an engineer?
No.
No, you're not. Okay. What's your background?
11 years with General Electric in manufacturing.
And back east?
Back east, Southern California.
When did you join?
19. I'm eligible for sabbatical, so. 88.
Oh, 88. Okay. Huh. have you, over the past year or so, increased the number of programmers you have in response to... Because I know that was one of the things that came up, was the need to put more resources into creating software. Mm-hmm. Have you is there anything specific there about how many you've added, or is it?
We've added about 60 to the AutoCAD business unit.
60 programmers?
About half of them have been programmers.
In the past year, this is?
About the past 6 months.
Okay.
And if you know of any highly qualified programmers, I'd love to talk to them.
Well, you're still looking for more, huh?
Yes.
And now, why have you done this?
Because we have felt that we really need to go back in and invest in the core technology and invest back into AutoCAD and the modeling extension and other sets of products that we know that we're going to be bringing to market over this year and next year.
Okay, so when you say invest, what you mean, you need to have more people working on the basics?
On the basic product and on additional product sets that we plan to bring to market.
Okay. And so the effect will be you'll have faster time to market plus richer products? Or
most definitely.
But both of those is where you're going for.
I mean, and understand, when we talk about a one-product company, the AutoCAD business unit can be a 15-product company in 5 years all by itself. And many of those products can be generating revenue on the AutoCAD scale in terms of going into vertical markets, addressing specific customer profile needs. So we're diversifying both in the other business units and within the AutoCAD business unit. And many of those additional people are working on new products within the AutoCAD business unit, and one of which is announced and will be shipped in fourth quarter to Concern Management.
Okay.
We're getting close to the end of our time, but one of the things that you answered to an earlier question, I'm not sure if you picked up on, you're starting to talk about the market opportunity for Autodesk. It's early on. Do you think you could elaborate on that?
Okay, sure.
Well, I mean, I think there's kind of the, what I call the short term, like 2 or 3 year opportunity, and the long term opportunity. The long term opportunity is that this company can sell software into every part of the manufacturing process of every product that is made over the next 30 years. And that's what we're working on. That's the opportunity. That is something that isn't going to go away this quarter or next quarter. That is something that none of the mainframe CAD companies that are currently addressing very, very small, very, very expensive markets are targeting. That's something that even a retail drafting product that came out cannot address. I mean, the big picture is that around the year 2020 or 2030, there'll be 10 billion people living on this planet, not 5 billion. Those 5 billion people will be using products, which means that in the next 20 to 25 years, on this planet, we're going to manufacture as much stuff as has ever been manufactured up until now. And it is our goal to be participants in every part of that manufacturing process. That's what this company is trying to do.
Okay.
And that's not something that you do next quarter or the quarter after, but it's something that each one of those products that comes out fills in a piece of that puzzle, so that in 10 years you have a factory which is totally automated from conceptual design to manufacturing, and each component of software in that chain is a component of software that comes from Autodesk, whether it's something we've written ourselves or something we're selling or something we've acquired the technology. That's not the point. The point is that we have a solution for the entire manufacturing process, for the entire architectural design process, for the facility management process, for the mapping process. Each one of those markets is an enormous market, of which drafting is one little piece of the puzzle.
Which is your core right now?
Our core is drafting, and that is the single most lucrative piece, if everything stays the way it stays now. I do not believe that in 15 years there will be people running milling machines all over the world where they are now. That is going to become automated. And the largest manufacturers it already has, but that's going to spread out throughout the entire economy around the world.
And so you see a role for your software in that automation process?
Without doubt. I don't see anybody else even working on it right now.
And in different markets, too, not just manufacturing. John's statement about facilities, about architectural, about geographic information systems, about mapping, is really what we're all about.
Okay. Well, one thing that would be good for me is I'd like to be able to talk to some folks within sort of the greater Autodesk community, like some dealers and some either large or typical customers, to get some sense as to how people put your products to work for them, and also to get with the deals, you get just a better understanding of this dealer network, and that should give me a little bit better idea as to how the company is viewed. But and then at the end of the thing, it'd be nice to know that there was somebody I can call with some follow up questions about some of the other things that I've learned. So I appreciate it. Some people can make some more time on this. But thanks for getting together on this, and I'm glad I was able to get you guys. And it sounds like a very interesting situation, and I'll try to find out more. Learn more about it.
Thanks.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I put one down in Harvard there for 3 months.
Let me see if I do have one.
I probably don't. It's like.